Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 130. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, Slippy Toad.
Hey Chris, I'm happy to be your sidekick!
Otherwise known as my nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Hey, what's up, Chris?
Hey, thanks for coming back. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. So we've got some new games to discuss, we have a bunch of news to talk about, and then we have this week's big topic, which is going to be the Nintendo franchise Star Fox.
Woohoo!
Before we get to that, though, we will kick things off by discussing a game that came out just last week. That is Kirby Star Allies for the Nintendo Switch.
Wow, I had no idea that just came out!
I would sum this title up as a fun, colorful, and chaotic platformer, you know, very much in the traditional vein of most Kirby games. It's got a simple pick-up-and-play action, intuitive controls, lots of enemies to devour, lots of abilities to acquire, a wide variety of environments. Even the eShop demo showcased a whole bunch of this variety. It takes you through a whole bunch of different levels all spliced together, fields, caves, beaches, etc.
It sure was pretty!
Slippy and or Pete, did you guys pick this game up? And if so, what do you think?
I don't know what to do. I'm like torn. Do I go Slippy? Do I go Pete? I don't know. Chris, yeah, I played the demo. It's great. It was far prettier than I was even expecting it.
Yeah, the game is gorgeous.
Yeah, and especially like, you know, some of the outdoor levels were really, really kind of showcased the prettiness. Like you, I noticed that the you know, all, there was a breadth of power-ups in the demo, mm-hmm. especially when you consider the, I can't remember the name, but when they sort of mega team up, where you get to like combine powers, basically.
Was that when they all turned into like a big boulder and just went started rolling down the hill and smashing through everything and stuff like that?
Well, there was definitely that, and that was awesome. But then there was also the there was the part where if you are like the Sword Kirby, and I'm butchering these names, I cannot ever remember the name of Kirby's. But you have the sword, and then all of a sudden, if you have a dude with you who's a fire guy, you can then combine those, so now you have a fire sword.
Oh, yeah. So you, like, raise your sword up like you're He-Man and getting the power of Grayskull, and then they can add, like, ice to it or fire or electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does have lots of cool stuff like that. And that's one of the cool things about the game is that it does have this emphasis on four-player co-op. So you can either have four human players going at it, or you can make friends with, like, most of the enemies. But one way or the other, you're probably going to have four hero characters running around on screen the whole time.
Yeah, and it actually didn't seem all that chaotic and was, you know, kind of fun to do by yourself. It wasn't too bad. I can imagine playing it with four people would actually be a lot more fun. But again, Kirby's not really my cup of tea, but that doesn't take away from it being a fun, beautiful game.
Well, I played it both solo and I played it co-op. I played through the demo and then I played through the first world and a few stages into the second world of the full game.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought that it was somewhat chaotic, especially when you're playing in multiplayer mode. Like, you know, with four players out there, it's like, how did I take damage? I don't recall taking damage. I couldn't really tell. And then sometimes I'd want to, take an enemy's power, but the CPU-controlled ally would just kill that enemy before I had the chance to get rid of my old power and suck up the bad guy.
Right.
And, like, there was one time during a boss fight, I just couldn't tell what was going on. I don't remember if it was the first one against good old Wispy Woods.
Yeah.
Or it was some later boss. But, like, I got my power knocked away from me, and I was trying to suck it back in, but instead I, like, ate my partner. I just completely ate him. He just got totally devoured in the course of battle. I'm sorry, whoever my partner character was, that I ate you. But, yeah, that just is the kind of thing that happens. Especially in two-player mode.
Yeah, it definitely just feels like a spam fest. Like, I just remember, I think I was Yo-Yo Kirby. That turned into Fire Yo-Yo.
Uh-huh.
And I was just spamming the button next to the tree. And, you know, my entire team is just doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't tell. I mean, it looks like in Smash Brothers if four players just, like, got into a corner and just start punching something. It's kind of similar. Like, they're just really not able to tell what's going on. That didn't take away from it actually being kind of fun, though. I still thought that, you know, overall it was a fun experience.
Yeah, definitely. There's, the chaotic parts of multiplayer, and I definitely thought it was more chaotic than you did, I guess. But then there are the good parts, too. Like you said, being able to get those sword abilities, being able to do these crazy team up attacks. There's one part in the demo, you know, where you can get your partners to, you know, hold up their umbrellas, and so they'll block the water flow, and they'll be able to, you know, set the string on fire, and that goes past where the water was pouring down, and that opens up a little secret area. And that's another cool thing, is there are lots of little secrets to discover, you know, hidden areas, bonus puzzle pieces, and paths that unlock new stages.
Yeah, it definitely felt even more like there was more of that stuff than normal Kirby games, if I am detecting things right.
You know, I'm not enough of a Kirby veteran to say for sure, but there's certainly plenty to look for off the beaten path.
Yeah, of course.
That is true. And the partner AI is pretty solid. I mean, there are those parts where, you know, it goes off and it kills something that I'm trying to not kill. But I suppose that's better than it just being, you know, dumber than dirt and just sitting there and not doing anything.
Right, like most co-op characters in Resident Evil games.
Yeah, something like that. One thing I thought was kind of funny and interesting is, did you notice that when you, I guess, you know, sort of touch a partner character and like share your food with them, it kind of looks like Kirby's just making out with them.
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but I'm pretty sure Kirby is laying a smooch down on his partners when he's you know, sharing the food. I mean, he doesn't really have arms long enough to give him a hug or anything, or a high five necessarily. Yeah, I think he's going full on with the lips, which with Kirby is, you know, kind of dangerous. You never really know what's coming out of that mouth.
You won't catch me doing that.
So yeah, like I said, I played through the first world and part of the second. The first world is the world of peace, Dreamland. And, you know, I would consider this a spoiler, except it's been in all the trailers and it was in the demo. And that is where you fight, you know, that super buff King DDD at the end. And that part's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But where's his nipple?
Mario took them. Mario took all the nipples.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's a game coming out soon, right, where you have to find his nipples back?
Mario's nipples are missing. Oh, sorry, that's King Dedede's nipples are missing. Right. My mistake. Anyway, in the full game, after you beat King Dedede at the end of the first world, the credits actually roll. They scroll by super fast, which is pretty hilarious. And after that, you move on to Planet Popstar, the World of Miracles. But I only played a few stages into that. But yeah, it was definitely fun. Lots of diversity, lots of cool powers. I liked getting the new artist power up and, you know, making my drawings come to life. And like a little, you know, artist rendition of King Dedede would run around and smack opponents, or artist rendition of whatever you had. If there's one issue I've kind of always had with the Kirby games, and it's almost like, you know, there's just too much stuff. It's like, you know, there are all these power-ups. Which one is best? Which one should I get? And for the most part, it doesn't matter. But then once in a while, you'll get to a part of the game where it's like, oh, if only I had this one power, I could have done something cool here. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. Replaying the levels is still fun, and it doesn't really, you know, send you back very far if that's what you end up doing. So it's definitely enjoyable.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with that. But yeah, I can see that being a kind of a pain in the butt.
Another thing I noticed about the game is that, you know, sometimes you would have to get, you know, four characters all on the screen, you'd all activate something at once, and it would cause some big level-changing explosion or something. And one thing I kept thinking as I was doing that is like, wow, this looked really cool in stereoscopic 3D. Like, it was almost like they had made it intending for this game to go on 3DS, but it ended up being on Switch instead.
You never know, right?
Anyway, like we were saying, fun, enjoyable, cute, very pretty. Are you going to pick up the full game?
I don't think I am, and that's not because it's not a good game, but it's just because I'm not a huge, huge Kirby fan. If I had three other people to play this with consistently, then I'd consider it, I think. Or if I had a kid of age, then I would probably do the same. But I just can't see myself sitting down and playing this with all these other games that I need to play.
Yeah, I would say pretty much the same thing. That's kind of the biggest drawback for me as well, is just I have so many other Switch games to play at this time. I don't know how much time I'll be able to devote to Kirby. But that's not saying it's not an excellent game. It seems pretty darn cool from what I've played so far.
Now, Chris, did you happen to see Curling Stone Kirby? Or Splash Curling, they call it?
Oh, I did. I don't really remember what it was, since there was so much crazy stuff going on the screen at that time. But yes, I do believe that I did use that ability at some time, that was as I was going through the caves, probably.
Yes, yeah, so no spoilers here, but, well, I guess it is a spoiler, but I don't want to go too deep, but essentially, if you're Stone Kirby and you also have like an ice or a water person with you,
yes,
you can then activate this move called Splash Curling, and Kirby turns into a curling stone and gets chucked across the level, and it's actually pretty awesome.
All right, well, if I play that part again, I'll have to pay closer attention and be sure to check that out.
Well, you know, Mr. T is also a curling fan, right?
I've heard that. So maybe he is playing this game right now. Who knows?
One can hope.
Okay, moving on from there, let's move along to some news. First off, just a couple days ago, there was a new Nindies Showcase presentation.
Man.
There were a whole bunch of upcoming Switch games shown, probably more than we want to get into detail about right here on this episode. But I did want to discuss a few of them, just pick out our top choices and discuss which ones we are most looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. Chris, every time I see one of these dang Nindies Showcases, I can't help but just like watch my pocketbook deflate. it's like they should just have a running total of how much money I'm going to spend in the corner during the video. So it's like, oh, $19.99 and then $29.99 and then $4.99.
Yeah, there is a lot of good looking stuff on there, but the one that was head and shoulders above the rest, easily my favorite game shown on the presentation, was The Messenger, which isn't actually about messengers or messages, but it is about ninjas. And to me, this just looks amazing. It looks like a modern-day Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Where you play as a ninja, you know, running and jumping over deadly pits of spikes and these other crazy swinging obstacles, and then you're scuba diving and, like, floating through the air in, you know, one of those, you know, squirrel suits. Not a literal squirrel suit, but, you know, one of those squirrel suits. And you can, like, grapple enemies and walls and throw shuriken. And, of course, it's got wall jumps and... You know, huge old bosses, and probably the coolest part, of course, is going through those warp portals and switching between 8 and 16-bit modes.
Yeah, unbelievable. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, this really looks like it could just be a sequel to Ninja Gaiden, which is pretty awesome, and probably about one of the best compliments you can give a game.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, you're right. I think even if it was just the way it looked when it's in 8-bit mode, I would still be intrigued. I think now that they added the warp points to jump between 8-bit and 16-bit, I mean, what's not to love about this title?
Yeah, everything about it looks totally awesome. It's coming out this summer, and I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Count me in on that one, too.
All right. There was also another Ninja game that was discussed. That is Mark of the Ninja Remastered.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they did not show that game. They just showed some artwork. They showed a logo. They announced it is coming out this fall. But they did say it includes, you know, remastered HD visuals, audio, and cutscenes. It's going to include a special edition expansion content that wasn't in the original release of Mark of the Ninja, and as well as a new game plus mode. Plus, just the core experience, you know, it's a 2D stealth action game. You know, it's been very renowned when this game was released on other platforms. I have not actually played on other platforms, although I think I did buy it, like, when it was on sale on Xbox 360 or something. And I just never got around to it.
Yeah, I do that.
But hopefully, I can remedy that when this version comes out on Switch. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there really wasn't an actual, you know, clips of gameplay, but the trailer looked cool, and I've heard enough about the original that I'm definitely intrigued by this one.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I mean, obviously I heard great things, that's why I bought it, but, you know, just never happened. But, you know, I'm just glad that, you know, here's a chance at a new release with, you know, all these updates on the Switch, so that seems pretty cool.
Yep, count me in, again.
Another one that looked pretty nifty to me is Phantasy Strike, which is a one-on-one fighting game coming out this summer. And their tagline for this one was, anything can be a weapon. And I don't know if they mean that, you know, that's literally part of the gameplay, like you're harnessing the elements that are in the background using the wind and fire, or, you know, it simply is just a tagline to emphasize, you know, the simple controls of the game. But, you know, there aren't a whole lot of fighting games of this type on Switch so far, but it looks pretty good. It looks like it has a diverse cast of characters, and, you know, I like fighting games, so I'm certainly intrigued about this one.
Solid choice.
Also on the showcase was Pool Panic, which is a very weird-looking pool game. definitely not your traditional pool game. It kind of looked to me like maybe the pool equivalent of a Golf Story. Of course, by pool, I mean billiard, not like swimming. But it's, you know, pool in these really bizarre environments.
Yeah.
Like, you play as the ball, and you're, you know, being whacked around on a boat or in a forest or in a desert or something. And it just looks, you know, very, very funky and bizarre.
Yeah, I kind of got a Golf Story vibe too, even though they definitely look like different games. I definitely,
oh yeah, totally.
It feels like they could be in that same sort of vein of like, oh, this is really fun, you know, just to be in these different environments playing a game you like.
Yeah, it does something, you know, totally different with the genre in both cases, yeah. So that's why I make that connection. But yeah, it looks very interesting, and it is coming out just sometime in 2018. And then another game that caught my attention was Bomb Chicken.
I'm starting to notice you like games with chicken in the title.
Well, I think that maybe Chicken Wiggle started a craze, you know? It came out last year. Chicken Wiggle Workshop is, you know, still trying to receive full funding on Kickstarter, but now we have Bomb Chicken. So we have another entry into, you know, sort of the puzzle platformer chicken genre.
I didn't know we needed another entry into that genre.
Oh, we need probably as many entries as we can get, I would suggest. You know, obviously, you know, it's big. Chickens are now big.
Chickens are in,
Nintendo
folks.
Systems. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's this chicken that lays bombs that you can use to defeat enemies or destroy obstacles or solve puzzles. And it's got pretty nifty pixel art graphics. And, you know, don't know a whole lot more about it than that, but what they showed, again, looked pretty cool. And it is set for release, again, sometime in 2018.
Yeah, Chris, that one's on my list, too. It just looks like it has some charm to it. The puzzle aspect looks fun. I just like the overall style and aesthetic to it. So looking forward to that one.
Yeah, there's something cool and intriguing about, you know, a chicken that lays bombs out of its butt. So, you know, extra points for that. Yeah, those were my top games from the Nindy Showcase. Were there any more that stood out to you?
Yeah, Chris, actually, I guess the ones that I would call out is Luminous Remastered.
Really? I was curious about that one because I've never really played the original Luminous game, and I and I just couldn't figure out what I was doing and couldn't get into it. So tell me why I should be looking forward to this one.
Yeah, Luminous just was kind of like the, you know, it's almost like Tetris was to Game Boy as Luminous was to, I think it was the PS Vita. Or maybe it was the PSP that originally...
I think it was PSP that first came out, yeah.
Yeah, so I've played it on the Vita, and I love it. It just kind of is the quintessential like pick-up-and-play puzzle game for the system. I'm not super into puzzle games on console, but the fact that the Switch is portable makes something like Luminous, especially this remastered version, that looks really stunning just from the trailer I saw. But I just think that between the sound and the way it looks and the fact that it's on a handheld, I think that, you know, all interesting reasons to own it, and I'm curious to know more.
Okay, well, maybe I should give this one a second look then.
Yeah. I also thought The Bad North looked pretty good as well.
Oh, okay. Which one was that again?
That's the title from Raw Fury, and it looks like it's supposed to be sort of a turn-based... I couldn't tell if it was turn-based or real-time strategy. I know they say it in the demo, but it basically is like you have these Vikings attacking, and it's just kind of this cool, stylized... You defend an island, and you know troops show up and try to take you over, and it looks like it might be an element of puzzle, looks like it might be an element of, you know, strategy, obviously... But I just kind of like the design, and it sounds like it's, you know, one of those games that's like different every time, procedural, or there's some elements of difference every time you play through it.
Okay.
So I just kind of like the aesthetic overall and the concept.
And does it have lots of burly bearded gentlemen like yourself?
It didn't actually. They were more stylized than that, sadly, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay, well, we can hope for more beards in the final product, I guess.
Cool, and then another big win, I think, for Switch is Banner Saga 3.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I played the original. I liked it a lot. I never beat it, but I definitely thought the concept was great. Really kind of had, like, a Fire Emblem-style vibe to it.
Yeah, they definitely emphasized the whole permadeath aspect of the game, yeah.
Yeah, and I know it's you know, this is the third one, but I know it's got quite a following, so I think anyone who's played it on other platforms probably would consider getting on Switch, especially with the portability aspect. I played it on Xbox and iPad, and I remember not liking it so much on iPad because it was all, you know, touchscreen. So I liked the idea of being able to play this on the go with buttons.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and of course, Banner Saga 1 and 2 are both coming to Switch as well. They say very, very soon. So if you haven't, you know, played the series on another platform, you will get the chance to do that. Such as me. I haven't played them before. I mean, I did play it a little tiny bit. Like, I played it at E3 or maybe it was GDC or something like that. I just experimented a little bit with the very first game, but I've never sat down with a production copy or anything. So it's cool that they're giving gamers a chance to do that.
Yeah, now speaking of giant burly men with beards, that game is full of them. So
yes, yes it does.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I was just going to say that there was that game Reigns. I believe it was like Reigns King and Queen.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
That game, I did end up playing on my iPhone, and that was, I believe it was just the when it was just Reigns. There wasn't, I think they added the Queen aspect for this release.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of fun with that. It's definitely like a, you know, not like a super, super deep game, although I ended up playing it for probably a couple hours.
Well, I have to admit, from what they showed on this showcase, it was really hard to tell what the gameplay was like, so it didn't really do much for me. So I'm glad to know that you've actually played it, and you know, you can maybe explain what makes this game cool.
You know, it's really bizarre concept, not going to lie. The gameplay is super minor. It's probably like, the best way to explain it would almost be like a Tinder. You get these questions on like a scenarios on a screen, and you basically swipe right or left depending on which choice you want to make. And it's a lot like a choose your own adventure where you don't really know what the consequence is going to be when you pick something.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think if you just kind of take it from the standpoint of like, okay, I'm a king and this is what I would do, and then you get to read the outcomes, it's actually really funny in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, you die. Like, the whole point of the game is you die. You die a lot. Like, sometimes you die in 2 turns, sometimes you die in 30 turns,
uh-huh.
But eventually you die. And it tells you, you know, how long you reigned as a king, and then you pick up where you left off with your son.
Okay.
And in this case, it could be the princess or whatever, but it's just really fun. If you're into games that are sort of text-driven, and you like sort of quirky humor,
I am.
I think that it's definitely worth picking up at the right price.
Okay, cool. You have definitely piqued my interest.
Yeah, check it out.
Well, moving along from the Nindy Showcase to some news about a few other Nindy releases. First of all, I just wanted to make mention that Shantae and the Pirate's Curse has made its way to Nintendo Switch. You know, the last time we recorded an episode, we didn't even know this game had been announced, and yet, boom, here it is. It is now out, now available for download right in the eShop.
Bam, right in your eShop.
Yep. I haven't picked it up yet, but I did, of course, buy it on the 3DS. I thought it was fantastic on 3DS. This is the game where Shantae has lost her genie powers, so instead of genie powers, she learns pirate ability. She's helping out Risky Boots and you know, learns to use weapons like a scimitar and a cannonball and puts a different spin on the Shantae mythos. I would expect that the Switch version is just as fun as the 3DS one. And I'm happy to see that it's on another Nintendo console.
I feel like I have to pick up this game at some point. I just have stayed away from Shantae, and I don't know why. It seems like a cool game. You rave about it.
They're all good.
So, you know, I think I'm going to have to pull the trigger.
Yeah, you should definitely get one of them. That's for sure. This one also has a special place in my heart since it was on the cover of the second-to-last issue of Nintendo Power.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the name Risky Boots. I can't help but laugh every time I hear it. And I feel like you need an interesting name like that.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, what does Slippy think of the name Risky Boots?
Well, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yes, I think I have to agree with you there. Moving on to another indie game, the folks at Nicholas and Choice Provisions have provided an update for Runner 3 for Switch. Runner 3, I believe, was shown off like about a year ago at the first Switch Nindy Showcase, and it finally has a release date. It's coming out on May 22nd. This is, of course, the third in the series of auto-running rhythmic platformers that started with Bit Trip Runner, so it's good to know that that game will finally be out in just a couple of months.
Yeah, totally, Chris. I actually really like this series. I haven't really played the Runner series much, but the Bit Trip series that this started with, I was a fan of. And they're really cool guys that work on this, so you should support it.
Yeah, it's a neat game, really quirky and goofy, much less retro than the Bit Trip games, but still very challenging. Now, do you think you will get the physical version, or do you think you would stick with the digital one? The physical version, of course, has a full-color manual and a soundtrack CD, and also, I believe, a little light-up keychain.
Chris, I'm going full digital. this generation.
Yeah, okay.
I can't help it. I, you know, the extra little trinkets at this point in my life, I can't do anything with. I only have an apartment. I only got so much room. I can only put so many things in my beard. So I really just I enjoy the fact that I can grab my console and not have to fiddle with a game.
Okay. All right. Well, that is an interesting segue to our next bit of news, which is that Thimbleweed Park is going to be a limited run game's first Switch title.
Oh, no.
Now, previously, I'd been led to believe that Flint Hook or Mercenary Kings was going to be their first release. But no, it is Thimbleweed Park, and it will be available for ordering on March 30th.
Wow, I'm such a jerk.
Yeah, because you're a big fan of Thimbleweed Park, right?
I am. Yeah, it's a good game.
So, yeah, starting in just about a week, you'll be able to pre-order the regular version of the game, which is going to actually be an open pre-order. So, you know, normally limited run games, you know, the stuff is very limited. You have, you know, sort of, it seems like, you know, a short window to place your order, and then it sells out really fast. But in this case, they're going to be, like, leaving pre-orders open all day, and they will manufacture to meet demand when it comes to the regular edition of Thimbleweed Park.
What do you think, Chris? You picking it up?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I already have this game. I've already completed this game digitally, and it's $34.99 to get the physical edition. You know, it comes with a full-color manual. It comes with what they're calling an interior print, which I assume that just means the backside of the game insert. Mm-hmm. You know, do I want to buy it a second time? I'm not sure. I'm on the fence. I haven't decided yet.
Hmm.
However, in addition to the regular version, there's also going to be a $64.99 collector's edition that's limited to 3,000 copies.
Holy Toledo.
And that includes the physical game for Nintendo Switch, as well as the manual with this, you know, interior printing on the insert. But also comes with a newspaper. Presumably it's like a recreation of one of the newspapers in the game, since, you know, that newspaper office does play a fairly significant role in the game. A foldable menu poster, some post-it notes, I'm not even sure what that means, Nintendo Switch exclusive stickers, a Nintendo Switch exclusive phone book. Again, I mean, is that just a recreation of the one in the game?
Yeah,
probably.
I think so, yeah. Probably just says Thimbleweed Park on it.
As well as, you know, a classic LucasArts-style box, you know, sort of emulating the old PC boxes that LucasArts games were released in. So. If I do get it, I don't think I'm going to be picking up the collector's edition. I probably won't have a chance because it's probably going to sell out in, you know, 5 minutes straight. But, you know, for people who are into that stuff, I'm glad that it's out there. I'm glad it'll be available. Yeah, I'm kind of probably leaning towards maybe getting the regular edition because, you know, it's like, oh, it's their first one. Get it on the ground floor. You know, don't want to miss out. So, I don't know. I might do it. We'll see. We shall see.
I'm excited to see stuff like this happen. I mean, I think it makes sense. There's a market for it. People like it. So, yeah.
And they're saying that they're using this open pre-sale to sort of gauge interest in their physical Switch games and will help determine how big their manufacturing runs are in the future. So that's another reason to, you know, if you're interested in this sort of thing, you know, get it now while you can.
Yep.
And speaking of cool games that are finally going physical, the folks at Sega have announced that Sonic Mania Plus is coming out this August, and it will indeed have a physical release.
Wow. And what do you get with Plus, Chris?
Well, I really, really wish I knew. They haven't said entirely yet. We know that it adds two new playable characters, those being Mighty the Armadillo and Ray the Flying Squirrel, who both originated in the obscure Sonic arcade game. There's also going to be an expansion to the Versus mode, so that will now support four players competitively. And then there's also a new Encore mode, and they haven't said at all what that is, as far as I can tell.
Wow.
So, you know, when they released this game originally last summer, just regular Sonic Mania, you know, there was this expensive collector's edition, but it didn't even include a physical game. It included, you know, these big old tchotchkes and things, right. But it's like, nope, no actual game. You just get a digital code for the game, and that was kind of ridiculous. So now they are finally releasing a physical version of the game to go along with that. And it also includes a 32-page art book, which seems kind of cool. But yeah, I can finally stop asking why have they not done a physical version of Sonic Mania. They've done physical versions of so many other games that probably, you know, haven't been as popular. But finally, they are going to answer that request from so many Sonic fans.
Nice. What do you think, Chris? Are you up for a physical release?
I'm definitely going to get the physical version of Sonic Mania, yeah.
Well, that's cool. Maybe they'll make a Sonic Plus amiibo, potentially?
You know, if they want to do that, I certainly would not object. I don't expect it to happen. I figure they probably would have announced it at the same panel where they announced this new version of the game. But yeah, I'm glad it is finally happening. And, you know, if they are going to get me to double dip, at least there is, you know, some new content involved. There is this art book involved. Now, if you don't want to double dip again, I believe you can get all the new content added on to your original purchase of Sonic Mania. But as to how much that's going to cost you, you know, Sega has not been very forthcoming with those facts. Originally, they said, oh, it'll be a free update for existing owners. But then they backpedaled and say, oh, no, it's going to be, you know, paid DLC. But they haven't really said how much it costs. But anyway, just getting the full game by itself is $29.99. You know, will the DLC be like $10 or will it be more? Will it be less? Who knows? But, you know, Sonic Mania, as we have discussed on the show before, one of the best games on Switch so far, my favorite games from last year. It's great. It's cool. There's going to be more content for it.
Wahoo!
All right. Well, moving along from there, you know, the last time we had an episode of Power Pros was when Nintendo, you know, made that exciting announcement of the new Smash Brothers.
Indeed.
And of course, we put out the call to our listeners to get some of their reactions to that and find out what kind of content they wanted to see in this upcoming release.
Mm-hmm. And what did we get, Chris?
Joe writes, realistically, he'd like to see ice climbers and a fun single-player experience. Hopefully, he'd like to see Squirtle and Ivysaur. And wishfully, he'd like to see Banjo and Kazooie as playable characters.
Hmm. Nice.
Power Up, that's at Op Power Up, says he'd like to see Nestor, the Amazon, ooh, person after my own heart, Captain Rainbow, Simon Belmont, Bomberman, and Shadow Archer in the game.
Definitely in for Simon.
But would it be Simon from the games or Simon from Captain N, the Game Master?
Has to be the games. The Captain N would be a nightmare.
Hopefully they put that in as an alternate costume.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
Indeed. Michael Opferman says he would like to see the Breath of the Wild champions in there, along with Mii characters making a comeback with more character classes.
Hmm.
Jacket K is here, says, well, for one, assurance that isn't just a port with new features. I know most people are convinced it's new, but I've seen fair arguments from both sides of the coin. Joey T says, I hope we get an event mode. I really like the melee version. You learn a lot of the movesets of characters you normally don't play in tough situations. I also hope that all the upcoming DLC levels are new and they don't charge us for the old ones again.
I completely agree. I miss the events so much from the melee.
Yeah, that's something that'd be really cool to see it make a comeback. Ganon 360, he's straight to the point. He says, Shantae for Smash Brothers Switch.
I know you would like that.
That'd be cool. I mean, I don't think that character's made a huge splash over in Japan, so I think that one would be kind of a stretch, but it would be awesome because she's a great character. D.E. McKnight says, I feel like the chances diminish with each new Smash, but I've still got to go with Lloyd Irving as a Tails representative.
I'm going to pretend like I know what that means.
That's the protagonist from Tales of Symphonia.
I knew that. That was a good tip off.
Eric Plunk writes, though he's not as popular as he once was, I've always wanted Professor Layton in Smash.
Yeah, I would like that too.
Yeah, that was one of my picks I mentioned on the show last week, so I think that would be fantastic. Cool Snow Pea writes, King K. Rool, Ice Climbers, Waluigi, and Isaac.
Not too bad.
Isaac being from Golden Sun, of course.
Yeah, of course. Waluigi really does need his time in the sun with Smash Brothers, so I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think there is something kind of funny about Waluigi just forever waiting on the sidelines as an assist trophy, but I could certainly see him being in it as playable sooner or later.
That poor bastard.
Lawn Dragon says he would like to see Pyra, Morag, Nia, and Zeke in the game. Those are all from Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Xenoblade love, please, he says.
I feel like that's a little far-fetched, but who knows?
I notice he did not say Rex being the main character.
That's a diss.
Rex is a little annoying, but I could definitely see some representation for Xenoblade Chronicles 2 being in there. Absolutely.
Sure.
Becky Rudranath says, Yolanda Artemisia from Style Savvy Styling Star. She is an accomplished martial artist as well as an entertainer. Her final smash would involve getting utterly destroyed in a concert mosh pit. Presumably, she's not destroyed. It's her enemies, I would hope. Also, Mike from Star Tropics, which is a cool and interesting choice.
The style-savvy choice is amazing. And, I feel like there someone should write a story about that, how she rises into the Smash Brothers circuit.
Yeah, they've definitely been the stranger characters in Smash Brothers.
And some Star Tropics love would be amazing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan Silverman writes, Sonic, Pac-Man, and Mega Man need to return, undoubtedly. Crash and Rayman should be newcomers. I want to see some more representation of the Pac-Man World games regarding a stage and music selections to go with it. Hmm. Jay Frank writes he wants to see Shovel Knight and Shinoa. To be honest, I'm not sure what Shinoa he's referring to. The only Shinoa I can think of off the top of my head is from the Castlevania series, from Order of Ecclesia, and she's definitely cool. And of course, Shovel Knight, you know, he seems like the most obvious third-party indie character to be called up, so that would be pretty amazing for sure.
Yeah, he's a shovel-in.
We can only hope. And then Sarah Schweitzer writes, she wants to see Phoenix Wright, Waluigi, Shovel Knight, Masked Man from Mother 3, and Isaac from Golden Sun.
Nice.
Yeah, lots of cool choices there. I mean, Nintendo's got you know, so much stuff to work with, so many things they could possibly put in. You know, Pete, you were not on our last recording, so you know, did you have any further thoughts on Smash Brothers that you want to share?
No, only that, you know, super excited that it's coming. I think, you know, it's funny, the last podcast I was on, we discussed how it's definitely coming out this year, even though we didn't know anything.
Oh, right.
So that's kind of funny.
That's right. I said it was my most anticipated game, and you called me out, and I couldn't pick it, but ha-ha, I gotcha.
I think if I had to pick one character to be in it, I would go with Captain Toad.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a huge Toad fan in general, and Captain Toad just, you know, I feel like it's time.
So you're going with Captain Toad over Slippy Toad?
They're very different people there, Chris. But Captain Toad, he's been around a lot longer, and I think he earns the street cred, you know. He's finally a captain now. He deserves to be in Smash.
Okay, if you say so.
That being said, you know, I know you guys talked a little bit at length. I'm going to say that I do believe that it is a port of the Wii U version, which isn't a bad thing. I just think it's going to be its own version. Because the last round was basically called Super Smash Bros. Wii U, right? Wii U version? Or
it was Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and Super Smash Bros. For Nintendo 3DS.
Yeah, so this one will be Super Smash Bros. For Switch.
I guess we'll see. I mean, my feeling personally is that it just hasn't been long enough since those games came out for them to have completely built a brand new game from scratch that would actually be out this year and have enough content that people would want. So hopefully they use that as the groundwork, and that way it can give us, you know, all the cool stuff that was in that game, but still build on it and add a lot more. I mean, I feel like everyone wants all the old characters and stages and whatnot to return anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think that, you know, if you look at ARMS and how much that's been supported over the last few months and year, you got to really look at Smash Brothers for Switch being sort of this like living, breathing thing that could easily, you know, they could continue to add things to for the next however long it's supported.
Yeah, very true. I would certainly expect that. I mean, they kept bringing out DLC for the last Smash Brothers for quite a while, and I'm sure they'll do the same for this one.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's move along from Smash specifically to some additional listener letters. This one comes from listener Tony, and he writes, Hello, Power Pros. I was discussing this with my friend and wanted your take on what a Game Boy Classic might look like. It just seems like there are so many options, and not all of them, such as the giant brick shape and puke green screen of the original Game Boy, would hold up with today's mobile-focused consumer. Then again, if they base it on a later model, you kind of lose the nostalgia factor. Let us know what you think. Pete, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, for one, I can't, you know, I hadn't really thought about a Game Boy Classic. I know we've talked about it.
I had. But, boy, have I ever.
but yeah, I mean, I think there really is a market for something like that. My personal take, if I could just design it from the ground up, mm-hmm. I would say something about the size of an iPhone, nothing too big, not like the original. Hmm. Make it look like the Game Boy Classic. Make the screen super sharp, like just really, you know, very sharp graphics. Because you've only got those four colors, so you just got to go wild with that. And I'm okay if it's like, you know, default it's like silver, and then when you turn it on, it somehow, you know, just the pixels show up as different shades of black, basically. I know what I'm talking about is a little bit more far-fetched, a little bit more like a tech item. I just think that there could be something really cool done with like a Game Boy Classic that would be almost like a you know, if they released it today, what would it look like?
Interesting.
What do you think, Chris? You're going to go much more traditional route, I suppose.
Well, in one sense, yes. I would certainly just use the original form factor. I would probably make it look and feel just like an original, you know, old kind of chunky Game Boy. I mean, yeah, that's what they did with the NES and Super NES, was they retained that original aesthetic that everyone remembers so well. In this case, I would actually, you know, just keep that aesthetic, keep it the same size, wouldn't shrink it down because that would not work very well. However, I would then include, you know, a much better screen, like you were saying, you know, make it backlit, make it very sharp, and then also include an HDMI output so you could, you know, play this stuff on the TV as well as, you know, just playing it in traditional handheld mode.
Holy shnikes.
Also, they would totally need to include some sort of link cable or some other sort of way to do multiplayer. I imagine it would cost way too much to do, you know, some sort of Wi-Fi connection. So, you know, probably just sticking with a traditional style link cable would be the best. But they got to include that multiplayer somehow. I mean, how else can you do Tetris right, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Moving on to our next letter from Justin Tomasio, which came through via Twitter. He asks, if you guys were writing a player's guide for Super Mario Odyssey, how long would it take? And would you cover every single moon?
Wow, this is an intense question.
So, yeah, I mean, thinking about that, you know, thinking back to the old Nintendo Power days, you know, realistically, we probably would have had, like, between 2 and 3 weeks to do that thing.
Yeah, realistically, that's probably about right.
And, yes, of course, we would cover everything. And we'd cover every single moon and how to get it. And, you know, maybe a rider or two would die along the way, but we would do it, you know?
Yeah, and the screenshots would be ultra-high quality.
Now, did you usually take the screenshots for the guides, or was that stuff outsourced? Because, you know, the way things worked at NP when I was there was we had that outside design firm helping us out, and they would do a lot of the designing and screenshot taking, and, you know, they would you know, help us out a whole lot.
Yeah, that was mainly all them. I did have to go in and take, like, retake a lot of the shots if they didn't work out or, you know, the copy changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely remember taking like a handful for Wind Waker. Nothing else really pops into my head at the moment. But yeah, there was definitely some times where I'd have to retake some shots. Maybe Paper Mario.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, nothing I was involved with, at least.
Yeah. Thousand Year Door is the one I was thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, that was certainly before my time there. But yeah, having these other guys, you know, help out, you know, would certainly be a tremendous asset in getting something done like this in a really short time frame. But yeah, usually it was all done in a matter of weeks. But we had the outside design guys helping out, and then we had access to the treehouse. So, you know, if we needed additional information, if we need to know the best way to do something without having to, you know, bang our head against the wall for days trying to figure out how to get past a really difficult part, you know, they could always help us out. So even though it was usually a pretty short window to complete the darn thing, you know, there were lots of people who were willing to contribute and help out. I mean, the design staff, you know, was pretty big. The people we could turn to for extra help was pretty big, but it did end up usually falling to like one or two writers to actually put all the words down. And that's where it would, you know, get pretty intense and a lot of late nights and, you know, not everyone would make it. You know, one of us would have a nervous breakdown or someone would perish from exhaustion. But, you know, in the end, it would all be worth it, at least for those of us who survived.
Yeah, you guys were quite a bottleneck. Just kidding.
Thanks. But, yeah, I think that would have been a lot of fun, even though, you know, we probably would have barely survived. The next letter comes from Jeffrey Skull, who writes, how do you feel about Nintendo's pricing structure? I have zero problems paying full price for Zelda, Mario, and many other AAA titles that Nintendo clearly put years of development into and have packed with content, but full price for Kirby, 1-2 Switch, and many of these Wii U ports seems a bit much to me. Couple this with the fact that Nintendo rarely lowers the price of their games until they hit the selects line, and it feels like Nintendo is almost telling me to just buy more of the high-quality eShop indie titles instead.
Chris, I feel like you have loads of thoughts about this, so I'd like to hear.
Well, The first thing that comes to mind is that Kirby is totally a full game, and I think it's probably worthy of paying a full price for. So don't be distracted by the 2D cutesy nature of it. Second, I also agree with him that all these ports would be a bit easier to swallow if there was a discounted price, and that would totally get me to double dip, whereas I'm a lot more on the fence about some of them. Obviously, they have lower dev costs than they do with a you know, from the ground up game that's built for Switch. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be awesome if they were able to reward players who already had the Wii U version with a discount, since, you know, they keep track of all that stuff through the Nintendo account.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, video games have remained like the same price for decades. You know, everything else has gone up because of inflation. You know, an action figure used to cost $3, now it costs $10. Whereas video games, you know, you can still get them for, you know, about the same price. So I don't really blame them for not discounting games frequently or selling most games at a premium price. And as someone who buys a lot of the games on day one, it's nice that I can do that and know I don't have to worry about, you know, coming back a month later and be like, well, I totally overpaid. Why did I buy that at full price? But also, they do have multiple price points. You know, Captain Toad's only $40. 1-2 Switch was $50. But as a consumer, I do think that more diverse price points would probably be nice. Like, I was looking at this upcoming Sushi Striker game, and I was shocked to discover it is a $50 game.
What?
Like, when they announced this, I thought it was, like, going to be a $10 or $15 eShop title.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll prove me wrong, and, you know, it's going to be, you know, rich with content, but it doesn't look like it's worth $50 right now. So, you know, should something like that be 30 or 20? You know, very possibly, very possibly. Anyway, Jeffrey makes a great point about the eShop and indies. You know, you don't need to pay $60 for a great experience, especially if you've already bought that game on Wii U, and there is so much stuff. You know, arguably there's too much stuff.
Yeah.
So if you think you get a better value buying 3 or 4 awesome indie games instead of some Wii U port, I think that's a great way to look at things and a great way to maximize the gaming value for your dollar. So, yeah.
Chris, that was a great point and excellently said.
Thank you.
And I think that, yeah, if you do make those purchases, like buying, you know, eShop indie games instead of the big Wii U ports, I think that you do kind of send a message, you know, that it is tracked. They know how much, you know, people spend on what. And if they notice that a lot more eShop games are selling than, you know, first-party Nintendo games that maybe aren't stellar, they get the message, you know, and that's loud and clear.
That's right. Speak with your pocketbooks, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And our last letter this week comes from Scott the Geek, who follows up to his previous message he sent us about, you know, backing up saves for the Switch console. And he writes, "Thank you so much for reading my email on the podcast. Just a quick follow-up. While I'm all for cloud saves, a main reason I don't feel it might be a viable option for Nintendo is the out-of-control file sizes of the save games for some titles. When you've got 2 gigs per world in Minecraft and 5 gigs per save in NBA 2K18, this would require Nintendo to also be a cloud storage business on par with Dropbox or Google, which I just don't see them doing. Even if it was part of the upcoming Nintendo Online service at $20 a year, I don't see that being sufficient revenue for Nintendo to cover the file storage demands per user on top of all the other aspects of the service. The nice thing about backing up to microSD is that it puts the storage cost responsibility onto the user, so the only cost to Nintendo is the development time to code the feature into the firmware. It's also something that could be released now and not wait for the release of the online service. Since both microSD backups and cloud saves offer different pros and cons, there's place for both options."
Scott the Geek, very serious on this one.
Yes, he is. And, you know, once again, I think he's pretty much right on the money with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way it works with PlayStation Plus is that you get a certain allocation of memory when you use that service, and you can use that to back up, you know, a certain amount of your save files to cloud backups. So I could see Nintendo possibly doing something like that. The thing I like about, you know, the cloud option is that it's easy and you don't have to worry about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like being able to control it yourself with micro SD. I mean, if there was only one option, I think that would be the way to go, because that way you don't have to rely on anybody else. You're only relying on yourself. If you don't get your save data backed up properly, you have no one to blame but you. And, you know, that's kind of why I like them both, because it'll be like, oh, look, my hardware broke. I forgot to back up for the past year.
Yeah.
So that's why having both would be nice. But I would say he is correct. If you're only going to have one, then micro SD would probably be the way to go. And it would make the most sense in a lot of ways.
And I say, how dare you both.
What does Slippy have to say about this?
Well, how dare you both?
Thanks, Slippy. All right, this is where I would normally say that it's time to take an intermission. But, you know, there's one other thing I wanted to touch on before we did that, and that is the news that broke in the last couple of weeks that a retailer that's been, you know, very important to a lot of Nintendo players is going out of business. That, of course, is Toys R Us. It is shutting down. And, you know, for a lot of us that grew up during the NES and Super NES and N64 eras, you know, that was a pretty amazing place. That's where we have a lot of our gaming memories. So, Pete, I just wanted to know if you had any that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, like you said, it's tragic. It's really sad that it's going under.
Yeah.
I wish it weren't, but it is. For me, I think about the times where I, you know, back in the day, would go in there with my parents and, you know, maybe pick out a game and they'd buy one for me and I wouldn't have any idea. I think Goonies 2 might have been one of the games that I picked up at Toys R Us, if memory serves. Having no idea what that game was like when I bought it, but...
awesome game, though.
Yeah, and then more recently, I remember when I was 16 years old, I had just, you know, started driving and there was a Toys R Us about, I don't know, maybe... a few miles from my house. And so I drove myself and sometimes other friends to the Toys R Us just to play Mario 64.
Nice.
Because they had a demo that,
yeah, I remember that
seemed unlimited. It seemed like the full game. So you could basically just play it as much as you wanted. And I remember going there and kind of hogging the machine. So yeah.
That sounds like you.
That's my Toys R Us memories. But what about you, Chris?
Well, I didn't grow up near a Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would only go there on, you know, special occasions. But I do remember, you know, back when I was first introduced to the NES by my cousins out in Illinois, I remember going out there with them and picking up pro wrestling because that was something they'd been wanting to get for a while. They finally had scraped together enough money. And so they went out there and picked up pro wrestling for the NES. And that was fun.
And that changed your life.
In a way it did. You know, it was mostly playing Super Mario Brothers back at their house that changed everything. But yeah, just the memory of going out and getting pro wrestling from Toys R Us stuck with me very strongly. I also remember having to drive all the way out to a Toys R Us to pick up a few Super NES games back in the 90s because the local stores were sold out. Mm. And I remember specifically like having to, you know, get a ride all the way out there, like, you know, it was probably 35 miles or something to get Illusion of Gaia and Killer Instinct in particular because nowhere else could get them.
Hmm.
And then more recently, like 15 years ago, I remember just, you know, perusing a Toys R Us, and that's where I found my, you know, super perfect mint in package NES version of Kid Nicky for $2, you know.
Wow.
15 years after, you know, the NES had gone out of style and there were no more games for it. So that was pretty awesome.
Maybe somebody was like sweeping up in the back room and they found it.
Yeah, something like that. That's what I think happened. Or, you know, it was like hidden on a shelf, you know, the top shelf somewhere where no one could reach and they discovered it. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been, you know, lots of different memories over the years and it's kind of a shame that it seems like they're all going away, at least for those of us here in the U.S.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
Yep. Right there with you, Slippy. Okay. Let's take that intermission and then we come back. We will discuss this week's big topic, which is Star Fox.
We'll be right back.
All right, we are back, and we're ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the Nintendo franchise Star Fox.
Oh, no!
Now, this idea just came to mind because I was thinking about what kind of big topics to discuss, and I thought, you know, Star Fox is kind of a franchise that has been around a while, but it's sort of always in the back burner. It's one we have never really talked about here on Power Pros.
Uh-huh.
And then it dawned on me that I believe this month, maybe even this week, is actually the 25th anniversary of when the game was released on Super NES in North America.
Wow, I almost can't believe it.
So I thought this was perfect, a perfect time to discuss this underappreciated Nintendo franchise.
Well, Chris, I really appreciate it.
Sure thing, Slippy. And I figure the natural place to start with this discussion is with that original first game released on the Super NES with the Super FX chip, introducing players to Fox McCloud and his wingmen and the world of polygonal games in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, Slippy and or Pete, what were your initial thoughts, your first reaction to when you saw and played Star Fox on the Super NES?
Yeah, Chris, I think the original Star Fox, looking back on it now, when I first played it, was just, you know, it was kind of mind-blowing that it was on Super Nintendo.
In a way, I suppose.
Yeah, and just the fact that, you know, you've kind of got these 3D graphics. 3D graphics weren't really that popular at the time.
No, certainly not on console.
Yeah, and it wasn't, like, you know, super well-known that was happening, and then all of a sudden, you know, Star Fox. Yeah, so if you remember right, it came around this time, you know, being the 25th anniversary and all that. Mm-hmm. But, this isn't really a big time to release a game. This isn't like when you release your Mario or your Zelda, typically. Now, I know.
Although back then, it didn't really seem like, you know, games were on the same sort of cycle where the big releases came out at Christmas time. I mean, I think that, you know, The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, came out about this time when it was released, too. So,
yeah, that's possible. You know, and sometimes they come out to support systems or whatever. But I don't remember even reading about Star Fox before it was, like, available. I just remember sort of word of mouth, a friend of mine telling me that it existed. And then kind of, you know, pulling up to his house and seeing the game and being like, wow, this is a thing Nintendo made? And it was a very story-driven game for Nintendo. And I know that sounds funny, but it's like, do a lot of the other games back then really have that much story? I mean, sure, Link to the Past did have some story to it. But the fact that it was like, you know, Nintendo didn't really have a lot of like games where you have like, you know, dialogue going on while you're playing. It's like, why am I caring about these other spaceships? Why do I care about these other...
Well, you know, it's funny because my feeling was that, you know, the way this game came about, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what always I thought of in my head, was like, you know, Argonaut came to Nintendo with this great idea and said, hey, look, we've got this polygonal outer space shooter that we want to pitch to you guys. Look at this technology. Look at how fun this is. And Nintendo, I feel, probably said to them, okay, this is pretty cool, but it really does need some character and some reason to care about this stuff. So in my head, you know, at that point, that's when the folks at Nintendo, I know Miyamoto was involved with the creation of Fox McCloud and some of the other characters, and they said, yes, we need this. We don't just want to have these polygonal ships flying around. We want to have this personality. And so that's why they layered those dialogue boxes and those characters and things on top of everything else. Because if you just look at the gameplay itself, you know, you don't ever really see, Fox or Slippy or any of the other characters, you know, doing anything on the screen. You just have these, really primitive polygonal models flying around and shooting each other. But it's really the addition, you know, the extra layer on top that gives the game its personality and fun and sort of that Nintendo liveliness that you'd expect from the publisher.
Yeah, Chris, it's almost like how, F-Zero kind of came to be. It's like,
oh yeah,
here they have this, like, almost like a tech demo, and then they add these characters into it after it's already built and created. And yeah, Star Fox kind of has the same feeling. It's like you said.
I guess, although with F-Zero, the stuff, yeah, that, they weren't even in the game. They were just in the manual.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. But the fact that, you know, the game, if you just removed all the dialogue, it would just be this space shooter that would almost not even feel very Nintendo-y in a way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So honestly, I have no idea if that's how the game was conceived, but that's always kind of how it felt to me.
Sure.
And, you know, let me be honest. When I first saw the game, I was not very impressed. Back then, my opinion of polygonal visuals was very, very low. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe someday this will be something that's cool. But for now, I think I am going to stick with traditional hand-drawn 2D graphics. Because, let's be honest, the models of the ships in the original Star Fox, they're pretty poor. Mm-hmm. The frame rate is atrocious. The textures, there weren't any textures, you know? So, you know, when you look at it, you know, from the perspective of today's technology, it's like, oh my gosh, it's hard to believe that, you know, people were amazed by this back then. But a lot of people were amazed. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not one of them. And, you know, like I said, even at the time, I was like, you know, someday, but not today. And so I did not buy the game at the time. I just wasn't especially interested in it. And because of that, I had never actually played through the original Star Fox until just last week.
Yeah, I saw that. So what'd you think?
Boy, this game is framey.
You're framey.
My opinion hasn't changed all that much. I mean, it's got a lot of cool ideas, but clearly, you know, it took a long time for a technology to catch up with those ideas. And it takes just like a lot of trial and error because you're kind of just shooting at these weird shapes, and it's like, what am I shooting at? What am I doing? Am I supposed to dodge that thing? Yeah. What the heck is this weird thing coming at me? Is that one of my co-pilots, or is that an enemy? And I can't really tell if I'm shooting at it or not, and everything's just moving along at 5 frames per second.
All right, how dare you on all of these fronts. Slippy would be mad. Don't let me get Slippy back out here.
Oh, I challenge you, Slippy.
Chris, how dare you?
Sorry.
You know, it is funny, and the style of the game, it's like on rails, but it really was kind of like, it let you have some like pseudo control, like you can go up, down, left, right a little bit more than you're allowed to normally in a on rails shooter.
Sure.
But then you also have the ability to like speed up or slow down or do a loop-de-loop, just kind of, you know, kind of weird control scheme, really, when you think about it. Like, can you name another game that really allows you to have that much control over an on-rails type environment?
Not off the top of my head. Plus, it gave you the ability to, you know, view it in first-person mode from the cockpit of your ship, or view it, you know, from third-person perspective behind the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I had to play it in third-person perspective. Otherwise, you know, I'm getting shot, and I'm like, why am I getting shot? I don't see myself getting shot.
Yeah.
Which I guess is just an issue with first-person games in general, but I digress.
I think the cockpit mode was literally just so that they could, like, show that, like, there was kind of a cool look to it. I don't think it was really very functional for most players.
So the game was obviously before its time, but eventually, you know, technology did catch up and was able to, you know, make the experience a lot more accessible and prettier and, you know, more like what, you know, I think the developers originally envisioned.
Yeah, so are you referring to the Star Fox 64?
You know, I suppose I am. I think that was really where the ideas all really came together. I mean, honestly, the polygons still weren't that great yet, but still, it felt like they were finally able to do justice to the idea, and it made a really excellent game. I mean, that was really where Star Fox came into its own. It gave you full 3D movement, as well as the on-rails stuff, you know, lots of varieties in the missions and environments, you know, more variety with the vehicles, introduced the Landmaster. And, you know, you talked about, you know, the first game having, you know, more of a story than most Nintendo games. And like I was saying, it kind of felt a little tacked on to me, but it felt much more integral in Star Fox 64. We had Star Wolf. We had all those bad guys. We had the connection between Pygma and James McCloud and all that stuff. You know, plus on top of that, introduced Rumble with the Rumble Pack. And so it really felt like much more of a fleshed out experience. And I think that that is the reason that, you know, Star Fox is still a well-known, well-beloved property today.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think Star Fox 64 is where the formula really started to click. You know, I think one thing you were just talking about, it kind of reminded me of that the branching paths. I think we need to talk about that as well.
Oh, yeah. That's a great feature.
So, yeah, a lot of games, especially Nintendo titles, didn't really have a lot of branching paths. Like, you could literally get to these extra worlds, and in Star Fox 64, it really shined. There was a lot of these, like, you had to hit a certain switch on a certain stage and one of the points in the level, and then you'd kind of veer off and go down a different route.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you
finished... Definitely a cool feature.
Yeah, once you finished the level, then a new level unlocked. So that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the original Star Fox just had, you know, those three different routes you could take, but it didn't involve any actual branching paths within the stages, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I could be wrong on that, too.
Well, since I only just beat it for the first time last week, I am not... at all the expert in it, but yeah, I think that was a feature new to Star Fox 64, and it was a really cool feature indeed.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, I haven't gone back to the original Star Fox. I mean, I turned it on for a minute on the Super Nintendo Classic, but that game is, like you mentioned earlier, it's hard to go back to because the graphics are just so, like, ugh.
Yeah.
By today's standards, especially.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned the Rumble Pak. That's quite a feature in itself, you know, really kind of ushering in the modern era of, you know, feedback while playing a game.
Yeah, I mean, again, to me, it felt like this was another case very similar to the first Star Fox, where that one I was like, yep, polygons, kind of before their time. And this, I was like, Rumble, it's this giant, huge thing that makes your controller really heavy. Kind of before its time. It'll be cool someday. So that did not sell me on the game, I have to admit. But it was totally groundbreaking. And, you know, it ended up being an amazing innovation that, you know, is now, like, commonplace with every controller and every console and every game. So, you know, I certainly give it props for that.
Yeah, and Star Fox 64 also ushered in multiplayer, which was pretty cool for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, that's true.
And I remember playing, you know, a decent amount of it. It wasn't a Mario Kart, per se. It didn't have the lasting power of that. But it definitely was fun in its own right, although, you know, really pushing the limits of the N64 at the time.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, in a lot of ways, Star Fox 64 could be considered the high point of the series. But, you know, aside from 64, aside from the original, what would you say are some of the standout moments in franchise history? Some of the highs and some of the lows? I mean, I suppose that, you know, if there's anything that would be better than Star Fox 64, it was the 3DS port, Star Fox 64 3D.
Mm-hmm.
It made a great game even better. You know, it's not that Star Fox 64 looked bad necessarily, but... You know, the 3DS version looks absolutely amazing. It adds, you know, more diverse controls. And, of course, it's got 3D, which works really, really well in a game of that type. I mean, if you're using the motion controls, you might not want to use the 3D. And when I last played through it, I turned off the motion because I just wanted to, you know, not have to move my screen around to mess up the 3D effects. But still, it was really cool. And it's got, you know... Again, all the stuff that made Star Fox 64 great, like those branching paths, and it introduced the character of who I like to call a pedo raccoon. I mean, I guess he was also in Star Fox 64, but he didn't talk out loud, I don't think. He didn't get a voice.
Yikes.
Until he was doing the tutorial in the 3DS version, and he's definitely some sort of child predator. You don't want to let your kids out near this raccoon guy. He's totally creepy.
Wow. This isn't Tom Nook, right?
They're probably related in some way. Wouldn't surprise me.
Amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I think that you know, creepy raccoon aside, is probably, you know, the high point in the Star Fox franchise. As for things that, you know, are kind of lows, you know, for years and years, we were wondering, you know, why didn't they bring out Star Fox 2? And then we finally got a chance to try it out last year when it came out on the Super NES Classic. And I was like, wow, I can see why they didn't release this.
Wow.
I
mean,
I don't want to be too harsh on it. You know, maybe I would have had a different feeling if it really had come out back in the early to mid-90s, but I doubt it because it's just as, you know, framey. And, you know, feels just as dated as the original Star Fox, only they really upped the gameplay variety and, you know, added, you know, these more strategic real-time elements. And so I'm sure there are some people out there who, you know, think it's great. But for me, it just didn't click at all. I'm like, man, if this had come out back then, I would not have enjoyed it one bit. It just feels like, you know, I'm glad they took the best ideas from that and use them elsewhere, because, yeah, that game just did not work for me. I would say that it was just way too ambitious for Super NES technology. It did have, however, a couple things that I liked quite a bit, and those were the additional supporting characters. I really liked the look of Miyu and Faye, and I would love to see those characters come back if there's another Star Fox game.
What about Slippy?
Well, of course Slippy's going to be in there. It's without question.
Phew!
Chris, I have to agree with you, man. I think Star Fox 64 3D is probably the highlight of the franchise. I kind of have to agree with you on that. It kind of took everything that was good about the 64 version and, you know, wrapped it up nice and pretty onto the 3DS.
Yep, totally.
I think you're right, as the motion controls didn't work so well with the 3D on the original 3DS, but I think that on the most recent, I actually haven't tried it, but, you know, they have the eye tracking, so it might have fixed it a little bit. Got to go back and give that a shot. And then I do have to agree with you on the low. I think Star Fox 2 definitely wasn't as cracked up as you know, everybody was kind of hoping. It is great to be able yeah. to play it. I'm glad that it exists.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm going to go and say that I think the sad part about Star Fox in general is that the formula that they originally created and worked for, you know, Super Nintendo and worked for Nintendo 64 ultimately just doesn't work super well in the new gen. You know, I think you can kind of see that with the latest Star Fox, with the GameCube Star Fox Assault. For some reason, it just doesn't have the wow factor that the originals had.
Now, I have to admit, I have not played a lot of Star Fox Assault. I did think it had a lot of good ideas going for it. I liked the idea of running around on foot, mm-hmm. as well as in R-Wings and in the Landmaster. I kind of remember that the on-foot controls were not very good. But it seems that overall people have a very low opinion of that game.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that one? Did that one work out well for you, or are you on the not-so-good side? I kind of think that game gets a bad rap myself, but then again, you know, I never finished it or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't play it a ton, but that was kind of my feeling. You know, I just think from my time with it that it really just kind of lacked the wow factor that the other ones had.
Hmm.
I know that, like, the initial levels where you're kind of flying through space, those were the best parts of the game. But I think that once you start to get, like, on foot, and as you mentioned, the gameplay starts to change, it just kind of loses something.
Yeah, I guess they maybe just didn't have the controls dialed in for, you know, a proper run-and-gun, you know, on-foot action game like that. Maybe that was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as you get, you know, further into the game, perhaps, and into areas that I never experienced, maybe became more of a problem. But speaking of the GameCube, you know, we haven't talked about Star Fox Adventures yet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one that I thought was a pretty interesting idea. You know, I like the idea of taking Fox out of the ship. I like the idea of him exploring this planet. And, you know, sure, it was basically a Zelda knockoff with some, you know, flying stuff in there as well. But, you know, from what I played, it seemed halfway decent. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought Star Fox Adventures was an interesting concept. And for the most part, actually was pretty fun. It really did kind of, it was a Zelda clone in a way.
Yes, it was.
It was kind of.
Oh, very much was.
I mean, it was kind of like, I think Beyond Good and Evil was kind of very similar. You both have a staff as the main weapon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I never actually finished that game, so I am probably not the right person to talk to, but...
No, I only played like 2 hours into it, and, you know, this is a game that I would love to go back to. You know, I thought about, you know, firing up my GameCube and giving it another spin if I'd had more time this week, but, you know, if Nintendo brought this game back in some way, you know, they port it to 3DS or whatever, I would give it another try, for sure.
Yeah, you know, recently I saw the most recent Ratchet & Clank. I think it's a remake for PlayStation 4. It was like the original but redone.
Yeah, I think so.
And I was really impressed with how the graphics looked in it and just the way that it kind of, you know, was translated to the new gen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking, like, a game like Star Fox, especially Star Fox Adventures, could really use, like, a remake like that.
Yeah, I think something like that actually probably could work very well. I don't know how, you know, possible that is, since it was a Rare title. Rare's last title for Nintendo, I believe. But, you know, if there was a way to do it, I think, you know, they could maybe fix some of the issues people had with it initially. Also, that game is noteworthy for giving us a fairly major addition to the Star Fox cast, and that is Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Crystal?
Crystal is cool, I think.
I kind of think they should have left her on the dinosaur planet myself.
Whoa, wow, you don't like Crystal?
She just seems like, you know, kind of creepy, hyper-sexualized for a furry character. I don't know, kind of kind of weirds me out. I think she can go off with Candy Kong and we can just forget that they even exist.
We might have to talk about this offline, but yeah, I once talked to the voice actress who was Crystal at a bar one time. And then we kind of went on a date, but anyway, we'll talk about that
Slippy
some other time.
Slippy and Crystal sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-F-O-X.
Anyways, I digress.
I suppose that this conversation would not be complete without discussing Star Fox Zero a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you spend much time with that game, Chris?
You know, not a whole lot of time. You know, I played through, I spent probably a couple hours with it, played through a handful of levels.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it just felt like a big misstep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were trying to sell it with innovative use of the gamepad, but in the end, I felt like it was kind of a disservice to both the gamepad and to Star Fox itself. Like, there was this huge learning curve that required you to look back and forth between both screens, and it was a constant struggle fighting against where you're supposed to position the gamepad and how you're supposed to use the controls. And it made the game super challenging, and I just don't feel like, the controls were up to the task. It just made it more frustrating instead.
Yeah.
So I feel like instead of, showing you the merits of the gamepad, it just, made me more frustrated.
Yeah, I have to completely agree. I kind of got turned off by the controls. I really wanted to like it. I was hyped for it.
Yeah, I was excited too.
And then after playing it, it kind of took the wind out of my sails. I do think, what we were just talking about, how updating, Star Fox Adventures for the current gen would be a good move. I do feel like this was almost like updating the old one for the current gen and, basically the original Star Fox. And I think that for some reason was not what was needed at this moment.
Yeah, it just feels like, it kind of, went off the rails, so to speak, no pun intended, and just went in a weird direction. I think that was like the one game that came out of Nintendo's desire to, prove the value of the gamepad. And not only did they fail to do that, but I think they kind of dragged the Star Fox franchise down a bit with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recently picked this game up at a severe discount, and I'll try to give it some more playtime one of these days. But initially, it ended up just not being terribly fun for me.
Now, did you play Star Fox Guard at all?
Oh, of course. It had Slippy and Uncle Grippy in it.
It sure did.
And while I wasn't, super captivated by it, it was, more pick up and play and easier to get into than Star Fox Zero. So, at least I will give it that.
It sure did.
So I guess this leads us, to the obvious question, which is, what can Nintendo do to revitalize this franchise? I mean, here we are talking about, sort of this celebration of 25 years of this series. And, a lot of the stuff we're saying is, boy, stuff was before its time. This didn't work well. That didn't work well. But some of the stuff did work really, really well. And I would like to think that Nintendo can find a way to bring it back and make it relevant again and make something that can surpass Star Fox 64.
Yeah, it's a good question, Chris. I thought about it a lot, and I think, what I would recommend, if it was my team making this game,
uh-huh.
I would think that something like an actual space shooter in the vein of like a almost like a Star Wars. I don't know if you played the old like X-Wing games.
I didn't, but I played Rogue Squadron and stuff.
Yeah, something like a Rogue Squadron. I think I really like the idea of levels being sort of more like that.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the dialogue interesting, keep the voice acting, especially Slippy, and then just really hit on that formula. I think the storyline really drives the game. I think that that's the moments that kind of make you have goosebumps and kind of have that really moments where it's like, wow. That's awesome.
Sure.
Where you realize that, Fox is avenging his father or something of that nature. What about you?
Well, for me, I can see them doing it one of two ways. I mean, I do like the idea. I do like the idea of borrowing some ideas of, classic shooters like that. And I think there is a lot to be learned from the Star Wars Rogue Squadron games that I think they could probably dip back into. But the two things that come to mind for me are, one, just to go back and bring the series to its roots. Keep it short and simple and straightforward. you know, maybe something that has a smaller dev team, a smaller budget, maybe it's download only, but it's still fun and you can just blow through it in like an hour, like I was able to do when I sat down and played this original Star Fox game, you know, to completion for the first time. You know, that's what that game was. That's the kind of game that Star Fox 64 was. Because, you know, I think it's really hard to draw out such a simple concept,
yeah,
you know, like, you know, flying through space and shooting, to make it, you know, a giant game you're going to want to sink 100 hours into, like you do with Mario Odyssey or with Zelda, where you get, you know, dozens of hours out of doing this. It's just not practical for an on-rails shooter.
Yep.
You'd need to have, you know, a crazy number of levels, and it would get really repetitive really fast. So, you know, I would rather have something that is short, inexpensive, doesn't have any filler, and is just straight to the point. Kind of like the new Star Fox, in the vein of new Super Mario Brothers, just going back to that simple, straightforward formula, and just give you, you know, a really, really fun but short game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like that, especially if you could, you know, it was a download title.
Yeah, and I think that's one way that they could bring this back and, you know, still, you know, cater to the fans who enjoy Star Fox without having to, you know, blow a ton of budget on development. On the other hand, I think they could totally go, you know, all out with a AAA kind of experience and, you know, fill it with all kinds of variety and, you know, sort of build upon what has made the franchise popular, you know, dip into some of these ideas that were established in games like Star Fox 2 and Star Fox Assault and Star Fox Command. And, you know, it would have, you know, on-foot missions where you could explore various planets. You'd have multiple vehicles. You'd have the R-Wings and the Landmasters. And so you'd have, you know, fights in space against, you know, these big enemy armadas, you know, Star Wars style, like we were talking about. And you'd have dogfights against, you know, the Star Wolf team or whatever would come up to replace the Star Wolf team. And, you know, maybe they could find some sort of lock-on mechanic that would make that really fun but work better than, you know, what they had in Star Fox Zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe add character growth. You know, maybe add a choice of wingmen like they had in Star Fox 2.
Mm.
You know, a big, you know, open universe to explore that's not linear and has lots of choices to be made. And I think if they went all out and did something like that, you know, basically, you know, people went out of a Star Wars game, but with Star Fox characters, I guess, in a sense. And that could be really, really appealing. Obviously, it would be much more of a risk. It would take a lot of development. It would be hard work. But, you know, as I say this stuff, I feel like, wow, this would be such a cool game to play.
Yeah, as you were talking about that,
even if Crystal was in it.
You know, as you were talking about that, I was kind of thinking it'd be great to also see a little bit more exploration with the characters.
Like, I'd love to explore various planets, but even if you're just exploring the ship and, you know, moving from place to place, you know, moving from, you know, the command center to, you know, the mechanic room where you're doing upgrades or stuff like that.
Totally.
I think it'd be really, really cool.
Yeah, you never really get to walk around the big ship.
No, the Great Fox. Yeah, that would be something cool they could add in there. Mm-hmm.
But I would also like to see a little bit more story with some of the characters. I mean, what if there was like,
yeah, totally.
If you mentioned like a, if they did a smaller game, what if it was like an actual, you know, story mission with, you know, Slippy and Uncle Grippy or something like that, right?
That would be amazing.
Right. Maybe even Uncle Amiibo's in there for some reason.
Sure. Team up the uncles. Why not? I have to say, one game we didn't talk about so far is Star Fox Command.
Oh, yeah. And, that's true.
You know, that was not one of my favorite games, but, you know, that's something I could also see. You'd have certain missions in this, you know, big AAA Star Fox where you do have to, you know, deal with, you know, strategic elements of incoming enemies. I mean, that was also in Star Fox 2. But I could see, you know, missions that are dealing with that. And so you have, like, this real-time stuff to deal with. But also, you know, there were characters introduced in Star Fox Command in the endings that were kind of hilarious. Like, that was the one that introduced Slippy's wife. You know, at the end, in one of the endings, he gets married and has like a dozen kids or something, and that was hilarious. But there's also the ending, I think, where Fox who walks away from Crystal, or Crystal walks away from Fox, and the other one is just left there with like a tear in their eye, and it's supposed to be super sad, dramatic, but I just couldn't help but cracking up about it.
How dare you.
But yeah, some of those character things are, you know, really, really interesting and fun. So I would certainly like to see more of that in new Star Fox. And yeah, playing levels as different characters would be really, really cool, you know. Go on a mission as Falco. Go on a mission as Uncle Grippy. go on a mission as Slippy and rescue Uncle Grippy. Yeah.
I would even mind seeing like something like where it's Star Fox's kid or something, like all of a sudden sort of taking the ropes, you know?
Yeah, that reminds me. That's a question that I've been wondering about for a long time. Do you think that Fox McCloud is like kind of ticked off at his dad? Like, his dad is named James, and you think his name is Fox McCloud. That'd be like if I was named, you know,
Human
McTypewriter or something. Yeah, or you were named, you know, Beardy McBearderson or something. So.
Yeah, you're right. He'd probably be mad. So what would his son's name be, I wonder?
Well, maybe it's James Jr.? I don't know.
James Jr.? Fox Jr.? I don't know. The world may never know.
Perhaps not. Anyway, I think there is lots of room for a new Star Fox game. I think there could be lots of really cool ideas if they chose to implement them. You know, I get the feeling that Star Fox Zero was not exactly a massive hit, but I hope that it does come back and do something really cool with it in the future.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I'd also like to know what fans think. Like, what do you guys think? What's your favorite part about Star Fox? What's your favorite game? What would you like to see with the future of the franchise?
It'd be great to get everybody's feedback. We would be happy to discuss that stuff on a future episode of the show, for sure. And with that, I do believe that brings this week's big topic to a close.
Oh, no!
So I suppose we should be wrapping up this week's episode.
Whatever you say, Fox!
However, before we go, I believe we do have time for one more thing.
Here, Fox, use this! Your shields will be slightly replenished!
And that would be a dramatic reading. This time, from the pages of Nintendo Power Volume 2, it is the introduction to their article on Galgo 13, Top Secret Episode. New York City. A helicopter transporting a deadly cargo of the bacteriological agent known as Cassandra G suddenly erupts in a fireball near the Statue of Liberty. The CIA blames the incident on a Russian KGB agent whose skill with the M16 rifle is legendary. His name is Galgo 13. But even though an M16 bullet was discovered in the twisted wreckage, not everyone believes Galgo 13 is guilty. An operative from the secret international organization, Fixer, transmits a warning before he, too, mysteriously disappears. Look for the Drek Empire, not Galgo 13. Then, in East Berlin, a man known only as Condor seeks out Fixer and confesses that he knows who stole the lethal virus. Galgo's mission is to contact Condor in Berlin, discover the secret leader of Drek, and expose him. Hunted by every agent on either side of the Iron Curtain, Galgo sets out on a journey few could survive.
Wow, that was very dramatic.
Yeah, wasn't it? I mean, you live in New York City. Have you ever experienced anything quite like that?
No, it's nothing like that, Chris.
Oh, okay. Have you actually ever played Galgo 13 Top Secret Episode? Because I have not.
I have, and if I remember right, honestly, I don't remember the gameplay, but I remember it being really unique.
I know there was lots of variety in there. I've heard, very mixed reviews. You know, some people think it's great, some people think it's terrible.
I remember you get sniped a lot, if I remember right.
Huh.
Or maybe you do the sniping.
Well, I definitely remember that there were, sniper scenes where you're, trying to target, something far away with your sniper rifle. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, it was really fun. There was a lot of varied gameplay. I remember...
Yeah, that's about all I remember about it.
Yeah, there's a helicopter level, you're running around trying not to get sniped. You're running around sniping other people. I liked it from what I remember. But like I said, I haven't touched that game maybe in like 20 years. No, 30 years. Holy.
Yeah, pretty much all I know about this game actually does come from this Nintendo Power article, to be totally honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, you should get your hands on this game and try to give it a play.
Yeah, maybe I will someday. All right, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com. And you can follow us at Power Pros Pod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would, of course, be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Till next time.
And our commanding officer, General Pepper.
Star Fox, we are in your debt.
We will see you next time. Oh, wiggle that, wiggle that, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle that, wiggle that chicken, wiggle that, wiggle, wiggle that, wiggle that chicken, wiggle that, wiggle, wiggle that, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle that chicken, yeah.